I have the one and only Robert Reed sitting in the studio with me. Hi, Rob.
How are you, Carl?
We're here to talk about, like, first of all, congratulations on Read Between the Lines, because that's an excellent blog.
Thank you very much. It's keeping me out of trouble now that I've been retired for 3 months, and it helps with the cultural shock, being busy on a regular basis to being not so busy, except for when I have a fly rod in my hand and I'm standing in a river.
Yeah. Have you caught a lot of fish since you,
Well, actually, people who are reading my blog will know that I caught a almost yard-long northern pike on a fly rod in the Saugeen River this summer, which was a huge thrill.
Yeah.
And I did that from what they call a drift boat, mm-hmm. where you stand and cast and somebody mans the oars and takes you down the river. And I had never fished out of a drift boat before, so that was fun and a privilege. And catching such a big fish on a fly rod is very exciting.
A yard long.
A yard long.
Wow.
Yep. I don't know how long that is in centimeters. I haven't.
So what did you do with said fish?
Just very carefully revived him to make sure he was healthy and breathing and comfortable and let him go back into the aquatic depths.
Oh, that's nice. I thought you were going to say, well, first of all, we filleted him and then we fried him up and then we made some fish chowder and then we,
No. I just catch and release and with usually barbless hooks so that the fish returns to his or her native environment as unmolested as possible.
Okay. Well, that's great. I'm sure the fish thanks you as well. If you're listening, fish, did you name him at all or no?
No, I did not name him or her, did not kiss him. That is traditional in some circles. Yeah, pikes have very, very sharp teeth, and he could have easily taken off my nose or my lips or an ear.
Yeah,
so
that's true. So, I did not
get too affectionate.
So did, and I guess there were lots of pictures too.
Absolutely, yeah. And in fact, it's the biggest fish I've ever caught that I had a photographic record. I've actually caught a larger fish, a larger northern pike. It was not on a fly line or a fly rod, but I did not have any cameras in the boat, so it's only the two eyewitnesses who I have no idea where they are that can attest to the fact that I caught a 42-inch northern pike at one time up in the Temiskaming area.
Oh, that is great. So, and in addition to fly fishing, on your blog, you have theater section, and I do believe you and I were both at Hamlet opening night.
I suspect we were. I was still working then for the record.
Yes.
It was essentially my last assignment. I covered opening week at Stratford, then I covered the two openings the following week, and it was hanging up my record theater reviewer hat and putting on my freelance reviewer hat for the first time.
Yeah. What was that? What did it feel like when you knew it was going to be the lot? Like, how long have you been reviewing?
I have been reviewing Stratford continuously since 1984. So I think it was about 32 years when I packed it in. And except for the wonderful Jamie Portman, who was the theater reviewer for Southam.
Yeah.
And
when
Southam was taken over by Hollinger, and then when the record went to Torstar eventually, I lost connection with Jamie professionally, but I would see him at the theater. And I know Jamie covered Stratford for a long time. He's still covering it as a freelancer, but he might be the only Canadian reviewer or viewer anywhere that has covered Stratford longer than I have. So it was a real privilege to find myself doing that.
Yeah. And now with Hamlet, how many productions of Hamlet have you seen?
How many
productions? Yeah.
I would think maybe a half dozen, because it's one of the plays that Stratford likes to have, there not only because it's popular and it's one of the greatest plays ever written, but it's a vehicle for actors who in a particular artistic director's eye at a particular time is kind of an up-and-comer. Yes. And I think it's, you know, one of the great showcases for young talent. And that certainly was the case this year with Jonathan Goad mm-hmm. as Hamlet. And people may know that Jonathan actually went to the University of Waterloo, not to study theater, but he fell in love with theater at UW and has since, I think he's into his 12th, 13th season at Stratford, and he's done a number of other good things as well. So this was really his coming out party
for sure
in a role like that. And of course, the opening production of a new season, it's usually directed by the reigning artistic director. And this year it was Anthony Cimolino. With a very strong cast on the festival stage.
I think so, too. I think this is one of the... I remember you and I discussing the production that Ben Carlson did
yes.
a couple years back, and we thought that was the production of all productions. But you know what? I think this year's beats that. And why? What made it so good?
Well, initially, I thought it might have been a better production than the Ben Carlson one.
Yeah.
But I'm beginning to question myself on that. I would like to see the two kind of side by side where you could compare and contrast. Ben Carlson is one of the great speakers of Shakespeare at the festival now. A gift that is not as prominent as it once was, you know, even though there's many, many fine actors at Stratford. But nobody speaks Shakespeare better than Carlson right now. So his Hamlet was very much the thinker, the scholar, and the language was beautiful.
Yes.
This production with Jonathan Goad, Jonathan is a little bit more macho kind of Hamlet. So I think this was a nice blend or balance of the mind and the body, the intellect, the man of action, of course, who doesn't do much until the end. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. He was a little bit more mischievous than other Hamlets, I find, as well. There was kind of a charm about him.
Yes.
And a comedic charm about him that I've never seen in Hamlet before.
No, but that is something that you often see in a Jonathan Goad performance.
That's
if
true.
There is a smile or a chuckle or a smirk or even a charming sneer, he will find it. And I think you're right, Carl. I think his Hamlet had a mischievous streak to him, you know, whether he was mad or sane or at what point, you know, he lost it. He never lost that kind of twinkle in his eye, that kind of outward kind of chuckle, you know, at the audience or, you know, at other characters on stage.
I also like, I like the supporting cast as well. I really liked his real life spouse, Adrian Gold, played Ophelia. And I thought that was great. I thought they were magic together on stage. I thought she was a feistier Ophelia than I've seen before and stronger than I've seen before, too.
I agree. And I think she was a sexy Ophelia.
Oh, yes.
You know, something that we don't often see. We see the porcelain-like fragility and the ethereal quality, but, you know, you could picture yourself going to bed with this Ophelia.
Yeah.
And she maintained that from beginning to end. Even in the last scenes, she did not relinquish her sexuality, which you would think would be more evident and more prominent in that role, but it isn't.
No.
I think it marked this Ophelia as something different and special.
And the same, I think the same with Shauna as Gertrude. I think she kind of went, well, I'm sorry, but I know. I'm sexy. I feel beautiful with this, you know, fabulous guy, Claudius, you know, and I'm sorry, son, but, you know, I have my needs, so, you know, get with the program.
Yeah. In fact, Shauna playing against Wynn Davies, I think, was an excellent pairing because I feel they're both very good actors in their own right. And they had a nice stage chemistry, and Shauna brought exactly what you're talking about, and Edwin Davies was a Claudius who was a little bit more kind of the smooth operator. Claudius is a character who is easy to despise, you know, particularly when you get the picture of what he did. With Win Davies, you never really despise the man because he had that kind of smooth charm that, of course, makes anybody so terribly dangerous, you know, if they have the mind to be.
Yeah, and kind of badass, too.
Absolutely.
So you kind of wonder, you know, how long was it going on between Gertrude and Claudius, you know, before Claudius decided to make that, you know, they're brothers, and it's kind of, I always think, well, what if? Always going behind the lines, what if? The other thing was, I love the look of it. I also like Tom Rooney as Polonius, because usually he comes across as a buffoon, and this time he was more satirical, sharper to me.
Yes, Tom Rooney is one of my favorite actors at Stratford in the current company. Mm-hmm. And I agree with you absolutely, Carl. He wasn't the comedic buffoon. He had more wit and intelligence about him. I think that gave us a Polonius that was just more than a comic foil or somebody to be pitied. And, you know, it makes his death, I think, all the more touching because he is not the cardboard comic character that he's often portrayed.
He's not like the disposable ensign in Star Trek. He's actually someone you're really sad to see him go.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And I just, I think this production was just, you know, 9 out of 10. I can't, the whole cast. I love Brian Tree anyway. But I thought he was great in the great digging scene. You know?
Yes.
And the other surprise was Mike Shera. Wow. Not just Mike Shera, it was Horatio.
Horatio.
Yeah, Tim Campbell, I thought, was very good as well. Just a smaller part, but, you know, a loyal friend of Hamlet's. And I thought he did a really good job.
Mm.
And I also like Mike Shera as well.
Yeah, Shera, I think, is gradually emerging the leading man ladder at Stratford.
Yeah.
You know, he's a tall, good-looking fellow. And he has a charm which he almost always brings to bear on whatever character he's playing. He was wonderful in Labor's Lost
at the end of
the season. Yeah, I suspect that as time goes on, as long as he stays at Stratford, that he'll be looked on to fill more kind of, you know, the romantic roles.
Yes,
because he has a wonderful sense of comedy, whether it's physical or whether it's verbal. And as I say, he has the looks, which, you know, most times is irrelevant, not important, but in a particular kind of role, in a particular kind of production, it all is a part of, you know, the allure and the illusion. I suspect, you know, good things from him in the future.
And he was originally from Shaw, and he was doing the same thing at Shaw as well, this, you know, kind of sexy leading man. And now I see him in Stratford, and I'm thinking, oh, yeah, go Mike. He's very good in tragedy as well, but he seems to be right. He seems to be finding his niche in romantic comedic roles.
At this point, he certainly is, too. Yeah. And there's enough roles out there that, you know, even if he doesn't become a Colum Fiore villain, there should be lots of work for him at Stratford.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, Colum Fiore was there that night, too. And I ran into him in intermission, and I said, so here we are, all these years later, watching Jonathan go. And he said, yes, indeed, we are, you know. And you wonder what was going through his mind, because when he played Hamlet, he was more like a Mel Gibson-type Hamlet, like angry and irrational and sort of tense.
Yeah, well, and he came to that through playing a series of Shakespearean villains as well. So he was a darker Hamlet, but he's more than able to portray, because Colum Fiore is one of the actors who kind of came to prominence at Stratford, who is a deep, deep multi-dimensional character. And whether he's playing, oh, I
Lear?
No, the doctor in the musical My Fair Lady.
Oh, yeah.
Or Lear or Hamlet. He really has command of the full range of human emotion. So
no kidding. He gets on stage and the whole place lights up. It's electrifying. And actually, when I think of that, when I was sitting there at Hamlet, I thought, this is electrifying. What is it? There was an energy in the air. Maybe it was because it was opening night. But I just thought that I haven't felt that vibe as Stratford for a long time. So
yeah, it may have been opening night, but in opening nights in recent years, there hasn't been that buzz. And I attribute a lot of that to Anthony Cimolino.
Yeah, definitely.
In recent years, until he took over full-time artistic directorship of the festival 3 seasons ago, I think the festival began to lose its way. I think people stopped going, and they went out of duty rather than excitement. And I think Cimolino is responsible for turning that around. I think the recommitment to good Shakespeare and maybe a playbill,
right,
which is still entertaining, still appeals to a vast range of people's background and ages. I think there is a commitment to classical theater reaffirmed. And I think people who are inclined to go to Stratford, both in Canada and stateside, and certainly our weak Canadian dollar is attractive to Americans.
Oh, especially now.
Especially now. I think there is a buzz to Stratford again. I think it's once again a summer theater to
be excited about.
Absolutely.
I remember a couple years ago when, you know, DM was there, I just thought, oh my God. Stratford's turning into a musical in front of my eyes. This is really bad. Not only did they change the name to the, what was it? The Shakespeare, Stratford Shakespeare Festival?
Yeah, which was ironic because it was actually kind of moving away from
Shakespeare.
And they tried to hoodwink the public into thinking they weren't renaming or retitling the festival, repackaging, which was, you know, pretty thinly disguised. And now it's back to the Stratford Festival, and even though there are usually no more than 4 Shakespeare plays a season, this year we had a contemporary play that kind of deals with that era. We had, you know, Ben Jonson's The Alchemist. And Jonson was a peer, friend, rival, nemesis of Shakespeare. So, and I think too with Cimolino, it's the directors he brings in direct Shakespeare. And like some of his predecessors in the founder, Tyrone Guthrie and Michael
Langham.
And John Hirsch and Robin Phillips, who recently passed away,
so
unfortunately.
Sad.
I think Cimolino is carrying on that tradition of artistic directors who have a vision and real insight into Shakespeare, and I have yet to see a weak Shakespearean production directed by Cimolino, and I think it starts with him. And you know, bringing in people like John Card, like he did this year, I think it reinforces his commitment to Shakespeare, and then everything else the festival does around Shakespeare
is
icing on the cake. But if you have a weak heart, you know, you're not going to be...
Your arteries are not... Yeah, that's what they can't support it. Do you want to take a musical break? What did you bring?
Well,
what music did you bring?
I did bring a selection, mostly folk music.
Oh, I know.
Because that is my great love. And all of these folk singers, singer-songwriters, are people who I have interviewed and reviewed and written about when I was at the record, but I have also profiled on the blog because they're really important to me and I want people to know about them, and I wanted some sort of ongoing record of my...
Of your fabulous insight into covering folk and roots music and all kinds of music and theater to boot. So what did you bring? And we'll cue this up.
This is a new recording by David Wiffen.
Yeah. Okay.
And people as old as I am in their 60s will remember Wiffen as being one of Canada's wonderful emerging songwriters in the 70s.
Yeah, exactly.
These recordings were made in the 70s and they were lost. And they were recovered and they were put together, compiled in a new CD that came out this year.
Okay.
Anybody who remembers David Wiffen, who has lived in Toronto for the past 50 years, mm-hmm. anybody who remembers that voice from the 70s will recognize this recording because, you know, nobody sang like David Wiffen, who, by the way, was a wonderful songwriter as well as a vocalist.
What song? What track would you like to hear?
Actually, it really doesn't matter. Anything will give readers a taste of, you know, a voice from the past, not forgotten. But
how about the Ballad of Inland Sailors?
That would be as good,
be good
as any. Yep.
All right.
And Wiffen does not perform anymore. His voice is shot. Unlike some people like Gordon Lightfoot, who continues to tour and perform when he shouldn't, Wiffen has packed it in, so it makes this CD even more special because we'll never hear the like of it again.
So this is David Wiffen on Coral FM, my very special guest, Robert Reed.
Bruises on my knuckles, head trigger on my gun. Don't know if I'm Jesus Christ or some balmy son of a gun. I've been playing with a dynamite, my hand got burned. Profit from what I've learned. Well, I just stopped by for collecting what I've earned. She had arms to hold me. The things she told me, you'd not believe a word I heard her say. Da-da-da, da-da-da, da-da-da-da-da. It happened to me every waking day. I'm proud and I don't ride easy, sometimes against the tide. My bones, they snap when the cold winds blow, the eagles howl outside. I roam the Northland in the cold sunburn, profit from what I've learned. Well, I just stop by for collecting what I've earned. She had eyes for listening, you could see them whispering, you'd not believe a word I saw them say. Da-da-da, da-da-da, da-da-da-da-da. It happened to me every waking day. When it snows outside and the horses won't ride and the trees bend west of the sea, the rivers freeze over and no balmy breeze pushes our ship home to the lee. The woods burn slow and there's no way of knowing if the bridges are lost or burned, and a man still yearns for collecting what is earned. The sirens are calling, our hearts they are falling, for a world that just may fade away. Da 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 da. happens to us every waking day. When the hills stand high and the wind blows dry, maybe then we'll rest a spell. Maybe get to talking, let the horses do the walking, tell the stories that are taught as well. Get some fireside heat and the coffee will be sweet, and the luck of a sailor will turn. Yeah, we just rode by for collecting what we've earned. She'll have the dreams that she sent me, the heart that she lent me, in a world that would have thrown me away. Da 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 da. It happened to us every waking day.
While I queue up the next track, Rob is going to do a short intro on Guy Clark.
Guy Clark, he is one of the great singer-songwriters from Texas originally, has lived in Nashville for many, many years. He started as one of the cowpokes that hung around with Jerry Jeff Walker, Townes Van Zandt, and Willie Nelson and Waylon Jennings during the 1970s, when Texas was a real center for American alt-country poetic songwriters from Texas. And Guy Clark is one of the legendary singer-songwriters, and he's a very literary fellow as well. And this song we'll hear is called Hemingway's Whiskey. It's one of my favorites.
Finished clean. He did not like it watered down. He took it straight up and neat. It was bad enough for him. You know it's bad enough for me. Hemingway's whiskey. You know it's tough out there. Good news is hard to find. Living one word to the next, one line at a time. Now there's more to life than whiskey. There's more to words than rhyme. Sometimes nothing works. Sometimes nothing shines like Hemingway's whiskey. For him, Hemingway's whiskey, warm and smooth and mean, even when it burns, it'll always finish clean. He did not like it watered down, he took it straight up and neat. If it was bad enough for him, you know it's bad enough for me. Hemingway's whiskey.
That was Guy Clark and Hemingway's Whiskey. on Coral FM with my special guest, Robert Reed, writer and blogger extraordinaire. So we are talking about the Stratford 2015 season and the current Shakespearean playbill. So the next play we want to talk about is A Taming of the Shrew. And so, Rob, what thinkest thou?
Well, it's hard to determine what was the or what is, because both these plays will continue deep into the fall, which is better if you were assigning numbers or stars to them. But they certainly are at least equal, and we can leave it to theater goers to decide which they prefer.
Exactly.
But this is a excellent production. It's directed by Chris Abraham, who in recent seasons at Stratford has really looked at Shakespeare with fresh eyes, with insight and vision. His A Midsummer Night's Dream of last year, with the same-sex marriage and the play within the play within the play format, raised eyebrows and excited a lot of people. And this year, I would say his Taming of the Shrew is a little bit more conventional, but that is not to be interpreted as a fault or a criticism. It's just that it doesn't maybe have the, you know, imaginative shock appeal of his production last year, but it's a superb production. Once again, the real life partnership of Ben Carlson and Deborah Hay are reunited. They were in a 2012 production of Much Ado About
Nothing.
They
were
a wonderful Benedict and Beatrice.
Yes,
and this time they're back as Petruchio and Kate. They are both superb. The chemistry that they have on stage is absolutely wonderful. They are both superb actors in their own right. Whenever they can share a stage together, it's always cause for celebration, and it provides an evening or afternoon of
sheer delight. Actually, people look at this play and go, oh, it's dated, it's this, it's that, and look at what happens to poor Kate. But you know what, I think Deborah Hay kind of went into this role with her eyes open, and I think she's very good at manipulating Petruchio to get exactly what she wants.
Yes.
I don't think she's a victim at all in this interpretation, and I loved it.
Yes. Just looking at Deborah Hay as Katrina, it's a commanding, extraordinarily fine production. It's a performance that will, I think, be a benchmark at Stratford for many,
Kates
many, many years
to come. Yes.
To come. Yes. And I think whether it was Chris Abraham in conjunction with Deborah Hay, or if Hay brought this intuitive response to the play, I think men generally, talking outside of Shakespeare, but nobody understood the human psyche as well as Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm.
You know, any man who believes that he is calling the shots is fooling himself, and he's setting himself up for a severe disappointment. In matters of the heart, in matters of amour, it's the woman who is in the driver's seat, even if the man has some sort of plastic play steering wheel in his hand.
Yeah.
And I think this was conveyed in this production.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
I think Deborah Hay carries the show. She's in the spotlight. This is even more spectacular when you consider that Ben Carlson is such a wonderful actor. He was a strong Petruchio. The dominance of Kate here is through her own doing, rather than you know, a weakness in her opposite, or any weaknesses in the production.
Yes, exactly. I just thought, this is a Kate I haven't seen before. Not like this. I remember Goldie Semple and Colin Fiore years back. And then there was a, and that was interesting. And then there was the Western, was it the Western interpretation that Miles Potter did with Sean McKenna?
Yes.
As Kate. And that was interesting. But I don't think, I just think Deborah is a little stronger and a bit more of modern, of a modern thinking Kate. So at the end, I thought, yeah, yeah, she's not exactly his victim, is she? She knows if she does all this that, you know, she'll get exactly what she wants. There's there are a couple of, there is one weakness in this production. I didn't like, I wasn't crazy about Bianca's performance, and usually she's stronger. So.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of Bianca, and I don't see her as,
not, you know,
everyone else is eclipsed by Petruchio and Katrina.
Yeah.
And so I really don't worry too much about the Biancas. They're there just for dressing inside the turkey.
Yeah.
And but I did like Tom Rooney, who we spoke about earlier.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah. I like Mike Shara and Brian Tree. And
oh, yeah,
they're essentially comic
funny
foils.
Yes.
Anyways, but yeah, unfortunately, women do not always get their full share in Shakespeare outside of the main heroines. And I think that, you know, Katrina in Taming of the Shrew, the spotlight is on her. I think she's a wonderfully drawn character, but Shakespeare, it's as if he really didn't have a whole lot of time for the secondary characters,
to sort of,
you know,
craft the secondary characters in this, in the, in this piece. What did you think of the opening? Like the very the opening of the show.
Yeah,
that was interesting.
It was, and again, I thought that it was you know, a what we have come to see as Chris Abraham touch. Mm-hmm. And
a signature, if you will.
Absolutely. And I think that it was an interesting way of bringing the audience into the story. You know, I think was very effective.
I think he did something similar with Midsummer Night's Dream as well.
Much more elaborate.
Yes.
Much more elaborate. This was and it was very much with, in keeping
of with the, yeah,
the theatricality of it all. And he was actually even, there was quite a few in jokes for regular Stratford theater goers
and critics.
Yes, and critics. And Abraham even referred to his production of A Midsummer Night's Dream from last season. Which, all in good fun.
Yes.
And I think it worked.
I do too. So that was a great production. And you saw Love's Labor's Lost. I haven't seen it. It was a late season opener. From what I hear, it's another very strong production. And this is where Mike Shara comes into focus, actually, as a leading man.
Yes, I think he does a very, very good job. I think it's a production that it's not one of my favorite comedies.
No,
I just can't warm to it. However, having a veteran director like John Card handling it, it certainly opened my eyes to some elements of the play that I haven't seen before. I have not seen in other productions yet.
That's always a mark of a great director. And it's like Love's Labor's Lost is kind of, you know, it's complicated. It's the men and the women. It's, you know, at a learning institution. Off the top of my head, because I haven't seen it yet. Oh, young men, don't they swear off something for a year or something like that?
Yeah, they swear off women for 3 years.
That's it.
Devote to praying, fasting, and study.
Yeah.
And, of course, no sooner does the ink dry on the proclamation than the Princess of France shows up with three attractive attendants, and the wheels fall off the wagon. The men and the women struggle to, you know, find happiness ever after. It's a young Shakespearean play. You can sense the a young playwright,
yeah,
intoxicated on language, trying out, you know, ideas and things that he will, you know, hone and craft in later plays. You see the early models for characters that will grow and develop in later plays, and it does have that kind of excitement or vitality about it. But at the end, you know, you're kind of wondering, what's this all about?
Yeah.
You know, these are young people infatuated rather than in love. And I think, you know, the point that Shakespeare wants to make is that, you know, love is not talking the talk, but walking the walk. And it not only is a exuberant emotion, but it has a patina of loss and regret and sadness that you don't find in this play until the very, very end, when mortality and death kind of slip in and throw a cold blanket over the festivities.
Hence the lost in Love's Labour's Lost.
Yes, but the production, happily,
yes,
did not lose its way, and as I say, it was a nice, strong way to end the four Shakespearean productions at the festival this season.
Yeah, the other Shakespearean production I saw, every once in a while, Stratford does this show. It's one of those rarely performed Shakespeares, along with Cymbeline, and I'm talking about Pericles here, which I thought was a really good production directed by Scott Wentworth, who, you know, has been, like, you know, a veteran actor. He's really come to his own the last couple of years, I think. I was very impressed by this production. And Pericles, it's pretty convoluted. Like, there's a lot of things going on. It's about families and generations, and the guy goes, you know, I thought, how unlucky can this guy be? Two shipping expeditions and two tragedies. So, you know, I think that, and I liked Evan Dewling's performance in Pericles as well.
Yes, I liked Evan. I think he is one of the young actors that is scaling the ladder at Stratford.
Like he did at Shaw.
Yeah, and this is essentially a romantic tale. And yeah. It's a play seldom performed. Scott Wentworth, although he hasn't directed much at Stratford, he's done a lot of directing in the States where he's from.
Right. Yes.
And he has directed Shakespeare in the States. And if I'm not mistaken, I think he will be directing some Shakespeare stuff next year.
Yeah.
They're looking at some of the history plays and truncating and mixing and matching and cutting and pasting things.
Yeah.
He certainly, I think it's evident from this production that he has a handle on Shakespeare. He knows what things are about. And as a result, it maybe wasn't production for, you know, the memory books, but it was very solid Shakespearean production with no affectations or snazzy, fashionable, this, that, and the other that, you know,
I think it
really
was,
don't.
It was a very clear production because I've seen Pericles before. I am totally confused. But with Wayne Best playing similar characters, playing all the kings, and Deborah Hay playing the daughters, the daughter and the mother, I thought that was really interesting as well. I liked that directorial choice that Scott made.
Yes.
It was easier to follow. The person I had with me, she'd never seen it before. It was her first time. And this isn't really a play. Apparently, Shakespeare didn't write this entire play. Is that right?
Well,
that's what I've heard.
Yeah, that's the speculation. And there's different views on who wrote what
part?
And the romances are difficult anyways in many respects, but I did like actually what you just referred to, Wentworth having the same character play multiple complementary roles. I thought was very interesting, and I agree with you, it was clear and concise and you could follow along. It added to what I thought was, you know, one of the interesting components of this production.
Yeah, because there's so many things going on, and he travels so many places, so I thought I'd really interested. And the, who's the woman that played Diana? She was also, you know, very pivotal role. I thought that was an interesting sort of way of linking everything together, the way he, the way she was portrayed as well. So, So you saw both the musicals. Should we talk about these? Because they're both, they're very different.
They are. One I thought was wonderful, and that is The Sound of Music. I am not a big fan of musicals. I am even less of a fan of The Sound of Music, but I could not help but be enchanted by this particular production.
And again, this is a you know, an old chestnut. So what made this cut above the rest?
Well, in two words, Donna Fiore.
Okay.
She has become an extraordinary director of musical theater at Stratford. She's done other things. She had a long apprenticeship as a choreographer, assistant director. She really knows the company. She knows the stages, particularly the treacherous Festival Theater Thrust Stage. Everything she touches in recent years has turned to gold, and this is no exception. I don't think any director, choreographer of musicals at Stratford gets what she does from the festival stage. The dance sequences or numbers are always revelatory. In this case, she had a very, very strong cast. It was, I think, the overall artistic vision more than anything that made this such a good production.
Okay, because that's an audience favorite. And I see Ben Carlson with Captain Von Trapp. So that would be a big part of that. It looks like a really great cast. And you're right, it is a, and I like Peter McBoyle too, the sound designer. He really knows his stuff. Okay, so The Sound of Music works really well, and that's probably continuing into November at this point. I think it might have been extended.
It might have been, and I think it would be, running deep into the fall as well. And I just want to make a note about Ben Carlson. I know we've said a lot of praiseworthy things about him, but the other thing about Carlson is that he is a very good guitarist. I've seen him play string instruments before, and he's got a beautiful voice.
Mm-hmm.
His singing in The Sound of Music is absolutely enchanting. If that musical has a heart, or even, if I can be so presumptuous, a soul,
right.
He captured it or touched it or reflected it in his singing. It is worth the price of admission. The young lady who plays
Maria. I don't know Stephanie Rothenberg. Where is she?
I think this might have been the first time.
Debut?
Certainly the first. Okay. I recall seeing her at Stratford, and she was strong. She completely assume that role in bone and flesh, and she has a wonderful voice, and she had great spirit and wonderful stage presence. She was excellent as Maria. And the other thing too, those crazy Van Trapp children.
I hear they're really sweet.
I don't know
what
Stratford is doing, but they had very, very, very good luck
with the kids
yeah. This year. Carousel was.
We need to talk about Carousel.
Yeah,
yeah. It's always been a problem musical, and putting it on, it's now a dated problem musical. I think, having done that show years ago in high school, you know, Julie Jordan and Billy Bigelow, and she's basically a battered girlfriend. So it's kind of like you have to kind of find a new vision for it, a new way of presenting it so that audiences don't sit there and go, this is a total turnoff. But with all the things happening, with Bill Cosby and John Gomeshi and all that kind of stuff, that just kind of brings it all back again. But Julie She's not. She's kind of. Kate's not a victim. Julie Jordan, you know, she's kind of very forgiving, but not as strong. Or what's going on with it? What happened with this production?
Well, I agree with everything you just said. It is a problematic musical because it is so dated. The director, Susan H. Shulman, does nothing in her interpretation to
bring it to the modern audience.
Yeah, or cast a modern light on the musical. It's almost as if, and again, this will sound presumptuous, that she directed it against her will, which, you know, I think is ridiculous, but that's the sense I got in watching it. It's as if somebody said, well, I'm strapped with this thing. I don't want to do it, and I don't care. I was not impressed with the production, which seemed not nostalgic, but anachronistic in terms of set. The acting, I thought, was lukewarm to mediocre. It was just bad, bad, bad. And I think it started with the very antiquated, myopic vision that the director brought to the production. And after that, it was all downhill. And to the point where I very seldom say this about any form of art, but it was offensive, not because of the subject of the musical or a theme that is expressed in the musical, which is abuse, as you've suggested, but rather the way the subject was examined, explored, the light that was shed on it just was nothing.
There was nothing
memorable,
really, to evolve from it. Like I think, and there's some beautiful songs in there. You know, there's beautiful songs in there. If I Loved Him is a great song. And there's another one. It's a famous soccer song in England that Jerry Marsden uses. That's saying that during the Pacemakers covered. Anyway, and it's from Carousel.
Yes.
There's beautiful music in Carousel. And having been in Carousel, I had to play The Angel That Comes Down to Billy Bigelow. And there's a way of playing that. You can play her sweet and angelic, but I didn't play her that way. I played her very sardonic, like, come on, Billy, what are you doing, you idiot? That kind of thing. So there are things that you can find in this musical. Maybe Susan didn't look far enough. And that's too bad because, you know, I see Evan Bueling here again in the cast. So,
yes.
You know, as Jigger, which is, you know, that's a pivotal role. So that's really sad.
It is, and we've discussed how good of an actor he is, but he is just a shadow of, you know, the actor that we know and we've seen in so many other roles. Very much a victim of a bad production.
What about, have you seen The Physicists?
I have.
Aha. Aha. What did you think of The Physicists?
Well, a lot of my colleague critics, they thought that it was dated. That is more the play itself.
Yeah.
You know, I guess we don't have the nuclear scare that we did, 50 years ago.
Yeah, during the...
But
yeah.
We certainly have... problems of... the ethical problems of good science being used for bad ends.
Yes.
And
yes.
I think that if you interpret the play more as a metaphor for science and pure science and how it can be misused to the point of, you know, putting humanity in peril, I think it still works for me. And it's kind of a wacky, zany premise, you know, with sane people pretending to be insane.
To save the world, basically.
To save the world or to take advantage of your opponents. And so for me, it was entertaining. It was provocative. A wonderful cast.
Yes.
And as a result of that, I enjoyed it. And it was once again, even though the Tom Patterson Theater is not a comfortable theater to watch theater. I certainly wiggle in those seats much too much. But the Tom Patterson is always the place where you can see interesting, surprising,
revelatory, provocative
theater. And for me, The Physicist, which I was unfamiliar with before seeing it this year, I thought it was,
I think it's a highlight, a season highlight for sure. I liked the cast. I really, it kind of reminded me a little bit at first of Einstein's Gift, Vern Thiessen's play, you know, Fritz Haber, and how he was, you know, working with nitrogen for good ends, and it ended up becoming, you know, chlorine gas. So I thought, okay, this is what would happen if those three, Einstein, Newton, and I've forgotten when Davies' character at this point, if they decided, you know, not to make the decision that they did at the end. And a very interesting play, and I really like the adaptation by Michael Healy as well. I thought Shauna was hilarious. I said, well, I talked to her recently, and I said, you kind of reminded me of Alice, almost on the verge of being cartoonish, but it was, you know, you have a hump, and you're walking around the Tom Patterson stage, and you're playing a, what does that remind you of? Richard III. And she, you know, and kind of like Boris and Natasha. You know, Boris Badenoff, Natasha from Rocky and Bullwinkle, and she said, you're missing Dr. No. Remember Dr. No, the James Bond villain? I went, yeah, that's true. All in black and white. There's just the white cat missing. But it looks like they had, you know, the cast had great fun.
Yeah, and I said in a review this year, I guess it was in the review for the Alchemist, Ben Jonson's dark satire. There's something about playing scoundrels, rascals, frauds, con men that veteran actors seem to really, really enjoy, and they get into it and they have fun. I think it's the kind of thing that a cast can enjoy.
Yes, definitely.
And I think that you know, when there's an additional element of make-believe here, because it's actors playing characters, which is standard in theater.
Right.
But here you have actors playing characters who in turn are playing characters. And I think that additional dimension gives actors a lot of room to play around with and have fun. And usually that sense of make-believe and fun-making is transferred to the audience, and that was my feeling, you know, watching this particular production this year.
Yeah, exactly. I thought Graham Abbey was a real standout as Newton. I was surprised. And I also like Mike Natajewski. He's an interesting actor. I've been watching him for a while now, and I thought he was very interesting too as Einstein.
Yes.
And then Jarrett Wynn Davies is very poignant as Mobius. That was a lovely performance.
I thought so. And with Wynn Davies, I thought it was a very, of all of the characters, you know, he had the element of humanity, you know, compassion and concern. And I thought he conveyed that very well.
And then you have a lovely tribute to Columbo with Randy Houston.
Yeah.
As the detective. Yes. I thought that was interesting. I thought, well, you know, I think he's channeling Peter Falk here, but Randy Houston's having a good year this year. He's very funny in Pericles too, I think.
He is. He's having a good year. And one of the actors that you mentioned, I think it was, I don't know if it was Pericles or Hamlet, but Wayne Best, he's having maybe his best year ever in 20 seasons,
yeah.
And he is a standout in The Alchemist as Surly. He is the only character who sees the beyond the charade, and he catches the con men doing their thing, but he's such a nincompoop that he becomes, you know, as much a victim as the people who he sneers at, because they are victims without realizing they're victims. So, but for Wayne Best, a very good year for him.
Do you want to take a break? We can come back and talk more about The Alchemist, because this is another standout show this year as well.
Yep, we can do that.
Okay, let's take a musical break. What would you like to play now? Yeah, it's 6 o'clock, and we're here actually. We're going to stick around for a little while longer, because we've got a few more plays to talk about and anything else that he would like to talk about. We've got all his favorite music here and all his favorite singers. So what have we got next, Rob?
We have Don't Judge a Life by John Gorka. And
okay, yeah.
John Gorka came to the Registry Theater last fall. He had a brand new CD with them. This is actually a tribute to the late, great singer-songwriter Bill Morrissey. A tragic case of alcohol taking over an artist's life. But this is one of a number of tributes to Bill. Greg Brown has written a tribute. Garnet Rogers has written a tribute. Bill Morrissey was a highly respected American singer-songwriter from New England. He was also a fly fisher.
Uh-huh.
And he died much too young with a very, very good body of work. But John Gorka, like Garnet Rogers and Greg Brown, they were dear friends of Bill's, and this is John's take on his friend.
Don't judge a life by the way it ends. Losing the light as night descends. For we are here and then we're gone. Remnants to reel and carry on. Endings are rare where all is well. Yes, and the tale easy to tell. Stories of lives drawn simplified. As if the facts were cut and dried. Don't judge a life as if you knew, like you were there and saw it through. Measure a life by what was best, when they were better than the rest. Reserve your wrath for those who judge, those quick to point and hold a grudge. Take them to task who only lead, while others pay, while others bleed. Tapping the keys in a life of rhyme, ending the tune in standard time. Silence fills the afternoon. A long, long way to gone too soon. Don't judge a life by the way it ends. Losing the light as night descends. A chance to love is what we've got. For we are here and then. We're not.
Okay, that was John Gorka and Don't Judge from The Bright Side of Down. This is one of Rob Reed's picks. And Rob, I got you queued up on the microphone here. So
Neither Here Nor There, which is
track
number 3.
Okay, let's do that. Now, what should people know about Jesse Winchester?
Well, the late, great Jesse Winchester passed away much too young.
Yes.
He had a couple of bouts of cancer, and the second bout he was not able to defeat. I think he was a terrific songwriter. He had a voice that was as warm and comfortable as a warm quilt on a cold winter's night, and he was a wonderful spirit, wonderful soul. I saw him in concert in London at the Aeolian Hall 4 or 5 years ago,
and nice venue.
It was an extraordinary concert. I know people in music miss him dearly. He was a true Southern gentleman. No one quite could sing like he did.
Okay, here is Neither Here Nor There on Coral FM.
Well, I was all torn down. My walls were falling all around. There I was all alone. And I don't do I poured myself a drop of hell and put my feet up for a spell. And I prayed for the favors, and I worried the neighbors, and I don't expect. This is neither here nor there. Well, I just made the whole thing up. Well, I admit I had a cup. The part we've loved someone. I could only love myself. Let's have a drink, let's have a song. How about so wrong for so long? And I played for the favors, and I worried the neighbors, and word of warning, I'm so blind. I just go by feeling almost all the time. This is neither here nor there. this is neither here nor there.
Okay, that was Jesse Winchester and Neither Here Nor There from A Reasonable Amount of Trouble on Coral FM. And I'm here with my special guest, Robert Reed. And we've been talking about the Stratford Festival to 2015. And so I guess you're looking forward to next season.
I am.
What Gil's going to do.
Both at Stratford and Blythe.
Yeah.
And it will be interesting. We know what is on.
We know, yeah.
Store for Stratford, but not Blythe, of course.
Yeah. I don't know what the casting is for Stratford next year. It hasn't been announced. I know the actors know their roles. They're just not allowed to say anything yet. But if I was doing creative casting, I like playing this game because they're doing the Scottish play. I could see Johnny Gold maybe as Lord M, maybe.
Mm.
I'm not sure who Lady M would be, though. That's the thing. Or I could see Carlson as Hay in Carlson and Hay and Macbeth, too, because that would be electrifying. Mm. And I think they'd be able to carry it off. But we'll see. What else is next year? Oh, one of my favorite plays they're doing next year is All My Sons.
Oh, yes.
Arthur Miller.
Yeah.
I don't think they've ever done that in Stratford before. Pretty sure not.
They might not have.
I saw it at Shaw, but I don't think Stratford's ever done it. So I'm really excited about that. So, well, it's always fun chatting with you about this stuff.
Thank you.
It's great. You know, you have such insight into the theater, and no one writes a review like you do. Blog or other, in print or blog, it doesn't matter. And, you know, Read Between the Lines is a huge success, so congratulations on that.
Thank you very much, Coral, and thank you for inviting me in. It's always been fun dropping by and chatting for an hour.
Yeah, we'll do this next year as well. Is there one more song you'd like to end off with from your collection of folk singers?
Well, why don't we end with a song by one of my all-time favorite Canadian singer-songwriters, the late, great Willie P. Bennett. This is from his first album, Trying to Start Out Clean. He did. He started clean. He ended clean. And why don't we play one of his great songs, White Line?
Okay.
Which, by the way, was recorded by David Wiffen on his Coast to Coast album. But while you're setting this up, I can remember with great fondness the Canadian Songwriters Festival at the River Run Center.
Yeah.
Willie P. Bennett was on stage, and he had just done Music in Your Eyes, another of his classic songs. When he was through that, he stepped out from behind the microphone, walked to the edge of the stage, and strumming on his mandolin, sang this song, White Line, without any amplification. And the packed house at the River Run Center in Guelph, you could have heard a pin drop. And it was one of the great moments in that five-year run of a very, very good songwriters festival.
Okay, Willie P. Bennett and White Line on Coral FM.